Welcome to the New Books Network.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to The Academic Life, a podcast series here on New Books Network. I'm Dr. Christina Gessler, the host of the channel. Today, we're talking to Dr. Bradley Shreve, who's the editor of Tribal College Journal of American Indian Higher Education. Welcome to the show, Brad.
Hi, thanks. It's good to be here.
I'm really glad that you're here. To start us off, I wonder if you would please tell us about yourself.
Well, I am the, as you mentioned, the editor of Tribal College Journal of American Indian Higher Education, which is the quarterly publication of the American Indian Higher Education Consortium, also known as AHEC. AHEC represents the nation's 37 tribal colleges and universities, which are found throughout Indian country in the United States. So what AHEC does is it advocates for tribal colleges, working to get them the funding that they need to operate. And also, AHEC is about asserting tribes' sovereignty, educational sovereignty, and working to push the federal government to uphold its treaty rights and treaty obligations to Native nations. So the organization has been around since 1973, and it has really been a forceful advocate for tribally controlled colleges, which, by the way, are public institutions. So I've been working with AHEC for about 7 or 8 years. Before that, I taught history at Diné College, which is the tribal college of the Navajo Nation and the first tribal college in the United States. It was established in 1968. So I hold a PhD in American Indian history from the University of New Mexico. And when I first started working at Diné College, that was my sort of first academic position and first job with the tribal college movement.
And what led you to that course of study? What made you interested in pursuing that?
Well, initially, when I first began studying at University of New Mexico, I had always been interested in civil rights issues. I had done my undergraduate at Kent State University, which, as you know, is where 4 students were killed protesting the bombing of Cambodia in 1970. So there's a strong tradition there of student activism, and that led me into an interest in the civil rights movement and eventually into American Indian civil rights and sovereignty rights issues. So at UNM, I did my study on the National Indian Youth Council, which is in many ways the Native kind of correlate to the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, which was the African American civil rights movement that the late John Lewis was president of back in the early 1960s. So the National Indian Youth Council led Native student efforts to secure the sovereignty and self-determination of Native nations and to uphold treaty rights for Native nations. So American Indians, of course, have a different menu of issues that they have advocated for, which in many ways, in some ways, they're similar to what African-American civil rights organizations were advocating, but in other ways, they're very different. So while the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, for example, at least in its first 5 years, was seeking voting rights and integration, the National Indian Youth Council was advocating for treaty rights and for the self-determination of Native nations. They weren't really very interested in integration. It was more about preserving Native cultural identity and some of these major issues that have always kind of been major hurdles for Indian tribes.
When did you develop your interest in writing and in editing?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
Yes, what led to your interest in writing and editing?
I guess as a graduate student, you naturally do a lot of that. And so from the beginning, I guess, when I was in graduate school, I was very much pursuing this idea of research and writing. That was really my main interest, more so than teaching. So, I was focused on getting articles published in peer-reviewed journals and other publications. I started doing that when I was working on my master's degree, and really did that throughout my my studies at the University of New Mexico and thereafter. So
how did you come to be the editor of this publication of the Tribal College Journal?
Well, as I mentioned, I was teaching history at Dene College. I had just published my book on the National Indian Youth Council with the University of Oklahoma Press. And one of the things, that was going on at the time is I had a son. Well, I still have my son, but he's older now. But he was a young, he was like 3 or 4 years old. And so I wanted to spend more time with him. And this job offered me the opportunity to work from home rather than working at the college. And so I applied for this job. It was, still within the Tribal College movement. I was able to maintain connections with many of my colleagues at Dene College. And so it was just a great opportunity. And, it's really satisfying to work and meaningful for me to work for a national organization like AHEC, which has been such a great champion of American Indian education.
And the structure of the journal is most of the pieces are written by guest writers?
Most of the pieces are written by faculty at tribal colleges. We do have a student publication as well. So students at tribal colleges, we publish their creative writing as well as art pieces and films that they make. It's called TCJ Student. It's pretty much all the content is produced by folks who are teaching at tribal colleges, perhaps administrators at tribal colleges, or students at tribal colleges.
The quality of the student writing is so powerful and beautiful. There was one piece in particular written by a student named Brianna G. Reed, and she was the student writing contest winner of 2020. Mm-hmm. She wrote so beautifully and movingly about experiencing domestic violence.
Yeah. Yes. There's some incredible student creative writing that we get every year. We just received, the entries for the 2021 contest. And I should add that each year we have a guest editor who's a well-known, respected, celebrated Native writer or poet. And so this year, Tiffany Midge was our guest editor for TCJ Student. The year before that, it was Tommy Orange. We've had Daniel Wilson, Kim Blazer, Lucy Tabahanzo. So we've had many different, guest editors. And so they select the winners for the contest. And then this year's entries will be published in the fall, along with our fall issue in TCJ Student. So check it out. It's on our website, tcjstudent.org.
And you mentioned that the journal comes out quarterly?
It is. It's a quarterly journal. TCJ Student is an annual publication. But Tribal College Journal is a quarterly publication. And then I should add, we also have a new initiative, Tribal College Press. So we have started moving into publishing books. And we just published our most recent title. It's called Meditation on Ceremonies of Beginnings, the Tribal College Poems. And so it was written by Tom Davis, who's a longtime Tribal College educator and administrator. And he's also published several books of poetry. So he wrote these over the course of about 20 to 30 years. And, they were written on scraps of paper and napkins and things. And we were able to compile them all, or at least the vast majority of them. And so we just published that in Meditation on Ceremonies of Beginnings is the name of the book. And you can find that at tribalcollegepress.org.
One of the things I really enjoyed about the journal that you sent me was that you do these features on different professors. It was really wonderful to get to read so in depth about different professors. And one of the people profiled in the current issue, the spring 2021 issue, was Dr. Daniel Wildcat, who mm-hmm. is this amazing champion for climate change education. Can you talk a little bit about these profiles that you do and that one in particular?
Oh, yeah. So each issue, well, not every single issue, but we do have this department called Profile. And so sometimes we do publish a profile in every issue in a specific volume. But sometimes, there'll be an issue that doesn't have a profile just for, space limitations. So we'll focus on, an educator, a leader, someone associated with the tribal college movement. Dr. Daniel Wildcat has been a longtime professor at Haskell Indian Nations University in Lawrence, Kansas. And he's also a well-known Native author. He wrote Power and Place with the late Vine Deloria Jr. He also has a book called Red Alert, and he's very well known in the tribal college movement as being one of the foremost advocates, for advancing climate change education, at tribal colleges.
Another feature that you have, in the journal regularly is you have, book and movie reviews mm-hmm. and I was thinking what an amazing resource they are. Professors outside tribal colleges are trying to diversify their syllabi, their reading lists, and want suggestions for books that are culturally correct, so that we don't assign a book that further perpetuates the problem. And so it was striking to me what an amazing resource this will be for professors who are looking specifically for materials that fit that exactly.
Yeah. So that has always been one of my major pet projects when I began serving as editor of Tribal College Journal was having a really robust media review section of the journal with reviews written by folks from tribal colleges, for the most part, who are experts in those specific fields. Take a look at our media reviews. We have, we usually do anywhere from 4 to 6 reviews for each issue. And of course, you know, there's certain publishers in the U.S. that focus on American Indian studies, such as University of Nebraska Press, University of Oklahoma Press, University of New Mexico Press. So a lot of the titles are published by those presses. But yeah, take a look, and hopefully you can find some good ideas for your for the courses that you teach.
Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals, so you can go back to doing what you love this spring. Looking for gourmet meals? Try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. And this is the part I really like. No fuss, no mess meals. Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning. You simply heat and savor the good stuff. Factor is the solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking. Head to factormeals.com/NBN50 and use code NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code NBN50 at factormeals.com/NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
I also noticed that you do your own podcast, and you recently interviewed Verna Fowler, who's the founding president of the College of Menominee Nation. Did I pronounce that correctly?
That's right. Yeah.
And I listened to that podcast, and it was so fascinating to hear her long and deep connection with the college, with the land, and her deep commitment to environmental concerns.
Yeah. Yeah. So, we started the Current Reflections. Initially, it just started off as an interview that we published as a transcript on our webpage. And then it evolved into podcasts, which I think is a much better format. Because one of the things, you know, there are these great leaders in the tribal college movement, folks like Dr. Verna Fowler, Dr. Joe McDonald, who served as the first president at Salish Kootenai College in Montana. You have Jim Shanley, who served as the president at Fort Peck Community College, as well as Standing Rock Community College, before it was known as Sitting Bull College. You know, Lionel Bordeaux, who's the president of Sinte Gleska University. So one of the things, you know, our missions in doing Current Reflections, this podcast, is to capture that knowledge that these elders of the tribal college movement have, so that we can preserve it for future generations. And, you know, it's also preserving their voice. So I think it's, you know, I hope in 100 years from now, you know, that tribal college students will listen to these podcasts of these elders and be able to extract their wisdom and knowledge for these future generations.
I was struck by that at the end of the podcast. You asked her what she would want to say as a message to listeners in 100 or 150 or 200 years. And I was struck then by the commitment you had to preserving the oral tradition, that you were looking that far ahead and wanting her to speak not only to now and to her past and to her connection to her ancestors, but to speak forward so that her voice would go hundreds of years into the future.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's kind of our goal. And, you know, maybe it's because of my training as a historian, but I've always taken this kind of broad view of things, a long-term view rather than looking at things just in the short term.
And that kind of leads to your concern right now. The current issue is about climate concerns, about environmental concerns. And the piece that you wrote really was taking a very broad and long view at it. Would you tell listeners a bit about the piece that you wrote in the current issue?
So the current issue is on sustainability and climate change. And we published several different articles from different TCU faculty. And as you mentioned, there was the piece from Dr. Daniel Wildcat, the profile on him. There is an article on Ani Nakota College and all of their various programs and initiatives that engage with sustainability and climate change. Sitting Bull College is also a leader in environmental science. But I think this is just such a critical issue, and it's even more so, as Dr. Daniel Wildcat pointed out, for Indigenous communities, because they are really being affected, perhaps more than anyone, by climate change. So they're really on the front lines, and not just Native people in the U.S., but Indigenous people all over the world.
And you wrote that in your article. You said Indigenous peoples hold knowledge that our ailing world can and must learn from. Here in North America, Indigenous institutions of higher learning, tribal colleges and universities are utilizing this wisdom. Is that a lot of the heart of the mission of the tribal colleges and universities to do just that?
Yeah, I mean, Indigenous peoples have a close connection to the earth and a great reverence for the earth. So there is this environmental consciousness that is really embedded in pretty much every tribal college in their curricula. So I think this issue really resonates at tribal colleges and with Indigenous peoples. And we've tackled this issue in previous issues of the journal. And so it's something, though, that we need to come back to regularly. It's not just something that's a one and done kind of theme for us. It's something that is constantly there. And, constantly needs to be addressed. And frankly, people need to be reminded that this is, arguably the biggest issue facing all of us.
You mentioned earlier on that the federal government needs to uphold its treaties and its promises to the tribal colleges. When I was researching earlier, I realized some of the tribal colleges are as small as 200 students. Some are larger, closer to 2,000 students, but overall they're quite small schools. Yeah. And small schools in general face greater funding hurdles, but tribal colleges collectively face tremendous ones. What are the biggest concerns for tribal colleges about resources and funding?
Well, tribal colleges are funded primarily through the Tribal College University Act, which was initially passed in 1978. Now, it was updated in the 90s, and actually AAHIC is advocating for another update now because things have changed over time. But tribal colleges have never been fully funded, so they're funded at a fraction. The federal funding that they do receive is a fraction of what other institutions receive, and that is accounting for the student count as well. So even though some of the tribal colleges don't have that many students, a couple hundred, they do tend to struggle much more so than other institutions of higher education when it comes to funding. The Tribal College University Assistance Act is essential to their basic operating needs. But, each year, AHEC advocates for new streams of funding for the tribal colleges because the need is just so great. And in fact, that is what AHEC is in the midst of doing right now with its legislative summit, meeting with representatives and senators and discussing their funding needs.
When you interviewed Dr. Fowler, she was talking about how one of the things she realized early on was that technology was incredibly important and making sure that students had access to it was going to be essential to the success and survival of that college and to helping students succeed. How are things like internet access and access to technology affecting tribal colleges right now when so many people have had to move to remote?
Yeah, it's been a major struggle. So when the pandemic first hit in about a year ago, tribal colleges had to transition, as all institutions of higher learning had to do, to online platforms. And for tribal colleges, it was especially challenging because many of them did not offer online classes at all at that time. So it's been really a crash course for a lot of tribal college faculty. And keep in mind that some of those faculty at TCUs are elders. They're, all tribal colleges have very strong cultural curriculum. And so some of the professors there are elders. They are fluent in their tribe's language, but they don't really have the expertise in teaching online, in online platforms. So it was very, very challenging and has been, continues to be. So there's that. But then the other part of it, too, is that internet connectivity in many reservations is very sparse. So, Native nations, a lot of the reservations here in the U.S. are in very rural areas where they just don't have internet connectivity. And the internet connectivity that they do have is pretty spotty and kind of expensive because of the lack of competition there. So that has really, made things even more challenging for tribal colleges and indigenous communities in general in the United States.
You mentioned that your job has always been work from home.
I work from home as editor of Tribal College Journal. We do have an office that's located in Durango, Colorado, where my colleague Marvin Tom works. So I go up there periodically. I haven't gone recently because of the pandemic, but and then I make regular trips to AHEC, to Washington, D.C. We have our legislative summit this time of the year, our winter meeting. And then we have meetings at other locations around Indian country throughout the year. So, the everyday work that I do, most of it's done here at home. Before that, when I was teaching at Diné College, I was working at the college, which is located in Salee, Arizona, up in the Four Corners on the Navajo Reservation.
So prior to the pandemic, in a typical year, how many of the tribal colleges would you typically get to visit?
Here in New Mexico, we have four tribal colleges. So there's the Institute of American Indian Arts up in Santa Fe. You have Diné College, which the main campus is in Salee, Arizona, but they also have their secondary campus is in Shiprock, New Mexico. You have Navajo Technical University, whose main campus is in Crown Point, New Mexico, and then there's Southwestern Indian Polytechnic Institute, which is located here in Albuquerque. I go out and visit those TCUs on a regular basis, with funding permitting. I will make trips to other tribal colleges. I've visited all of the tribal colleges in Minnesota, for example. I've visited tribal colleges in South Dakota, in Montana. So I try to get out and visit all the tribal colleges, but again, there's 37 and they're really spread out all over the place. So it's hard to make regular visits to all of them.
And when you visit and you make connections, what would a typical visit be like? And what would your hope be as far as the types of information that you gather and the connections that you leave with?
Well, you know, I'm interested in their programming, and we want to tell the world about the kinds of programs, the unique programs that they have, about their faculty, for example. So I try to meet as many people as I can to build those connections. Another great place where I do get to meet people from all over is that every year AHEC hosts the student conference at a different location. I think the last one when we met in person was in Billings, Montana. Before that, I believe it was in Bismarck, North Dakota, and then before that it was Rapid City, South Dakota. So it kind of moves around every year to a different place. But tribal college, all of the 37 tribal colleges send students, faculty, staff to this conference. And it's just a great place to meet people and to build those connections and maintain those connections. So, I take part in that every year, and looking forward to this year. We're unable to meet in person, but hopefully we'll meet again next year.
When you have a chance to meet the students, what do they tell you are the strengths of the colleges, and what do they tell you are the struggles that are still going on?
Well, the strengths is that students who go to tribal colleges can remain in their home communities and attend classes there at home. I mean, many indigenous cultures, living and, being with extended family is, critical. I mean, it's absolutely essential to support your family and to be there for them. And so to leave one's home community and to travel, go to some university that's 500 miles away, in some cases, it's really daunting. And a lot of Native students who do make that transition sometimes struggle, and it's hard to stay in college because they want to go back and be with their families and their communities. And so tribal colleges are really a godsend in that regard, because it enables students to remain in their local communities and to learn in an environment that is familiar, where there are people who, at least half the faculty are from their respective tribes. So, and share this, they have a shared culture. So that's really important for student success. And that's one of the reasons why tribal college students do succeed. And they succeed at tribal colleges at a greater rate than they do at mainstream institutions. Some of the challenges, like I mentioned earlier, are funding challenges. So tribal colleges just don't have perhaps the resources that they need to really, support top-notch programming and curricula. Of course, online platforms and technology, that's been a major issue that's come to the fore with this whole pandemic. But that's definitely probably the greatest challenge and continues to be.
What do you hope listeners will take away from this today?
Well, I hope people become a little bit more aware of tribal colleges and universities, aware of the needs and challenges that Native communities still face today. Some people just are completely oblivious. I mean, if you live in the West, you know, if you live, especially in the Mountain West, you are familiar. I mean, there are Native nations all around. But, you know, for folks, I know people in the East, family and friends who, you know, really don't have a clue about Native peoples and about the challenges and what goes on in Indian country. So I guess that's what I hope that people take away, is to sort of raise awareness.
And what gives you hope?
What gives me hope? You know, when I go to a tribal college, when I used to teach at Diné College, the students that I would get in my classes, the students who I interact with at conferences today, they give me hope. I mean, they're incredibly inspiring, some of them. And just the resiliency and perseverance among Native students is really incredible. I mean, some of the challenges that they face, and yet they persevere and they succeed. And there is this incredible drive to give back to their communities. And so a lot of Native students, when you ask them what they're doing and why they're doing it, they tell you they're doing it for their community.
Can I ask you the question that you ask your guests? Of what do you hope listeners who find this episode in 100 or 150 years, what's your message to them?
Well, you know, I hope that they hear this and they're like, wow, I can't believe things were like that back then. I mean, we've come so far. Things have advanced so far and progressed so far. I hope that's what they say when they hear this.
Thank you so much for being here today, Dr. Bradley Shreve, and telling us about your work as editor of Tribal College Journal of American Indian Higher Education. I'm Dr. Christina Gessler. You've been listening to The Academic Life on New Books Network. Please join us again.